So what Kant said is that just legal and political order is capable of exposing a genuine harmony of interests. So then we come to, okay, sorry, I have to just show it. Kant is an idealism. Then we will go on through the line in the middle, institutionalism. Maybe I should have the okay. So you can see institutionalism is over there. That is the theory that followed, the main theory that became main in terms of the main in terms of more clever or anything like that. It's just that it became most the most quoted, the most researched on, you know, it became like mainstream IR. So that's the theory, structural realism. And structural realism had some ideas that were different from idealists. They said that, well, why look at human nature? If human nature is good or bad, why do that? That doesn't really tell us much about how the state behaves. We should look actually at the structure, because they actually learned from realists that what matters is the structure. So they decided that we should look at the structure, and the structure tells us certain things, that we live in an anarchic system, and that matters for how states behave, it shapes states' behavior. And they also said that, well, actors are the most important, states are the most important actors in international relations. So states are the ones who really matter for how world affairs is conducted. So they agreed with neorealists on those two points, right? Okay. You guys don't really happen to have the slide printed out, right? Okay. But anyway, institutionalism, as you can see, is more or less at the same time, it appeared at the same time as neorealists or structural realists, the ones that we compared before. So what they said, structural realists said, it was valid in those terms that the state is the main actor, that we live in anarchy. Those things were agreed upon by institutionalists, okay? But they criticized neorealists for something. Ha, we finally got there. They said that it's true that this whole struggle for power is an important part of world politics, but it's not the only part. The world affairs is not only about security issues, right? There's a lot of stuff going on, actually, in international relations beyond security. And then they said that a state that prioritized security issues over economic issues is actually rare. That state leaders, they think of costs and benefits between the two issues, between the two spheres, right? So they think how to keep growing economically, gaining wealth, while also being at peace with others, while also being cooperating with other states and things like that. So there are much more to international affairs than neorealists said there is. So their assumptions, the main assumption then where they differ is the third one. In addition to the causal influence of states and the state systems, economic interdependence and the process of globalization also affect international politics. There is no hierarchy of issues between high politics and low politics. High politics is what realists call security politics. It's connected to security issues, so this whole idea of the struggle for power. And low politics is more connected to social issues, to economic issues, and things like that. So what they said is that there's no hierarchy between them. So security issues is not always on top, I mean, driving all the concerns. It's not like that. They argue that economic interdependence and process of globalization have effects on international politics. First, because it creates interdependence. And I will just read what the author said, that complex interdependence is. So they also talk about rationality. They talk about globalization, that there's way more out there happening than just security concerns. And they talk about complex interdependence, which is a world in which actors other than states participate directly in world politics, in which a clear hierarchy of issues does not exist, and which force is an ineffective instrument of policy. So besides the things that we already addressed, that there's no clear hierarchy between issues, they also say that other states participate in world politics, not only other actors participate in world politics, sorry. If you guys don't understand, stop me. Because, other actors participate in world politics besides states, like multinational corporations, like NGOs. They're all also there making an influence, right, in world politics. Especially in those other areas, they're not only security concern, but not necessarily so. And they argue that force is not an effective instrument of policy. That always thinking in terms of aggression is not really a good idea. This is not always going to get what you want, being aggressive, by being aggressive, right? So they think that sometimes we can try to struggle a bargain between states. They can rationally come up with agreements that will give both states mutual benefits, right? This they're taking from the idealists of or Kant. They also argue that the last assumption is that the type of political order within a state influences how the state behaves in the international realm and may eventually work to change the international system. So they decided to look at states not as black box, as unitary actors that are what happens inside the states did not matter for realists, right? That doesn't matter. What matters is how the state will behave internationally, and that's always driven by security concerns. So what's going on inside the state doesn't matter that much for realists. What they are saying, the liberals or the structural, the neoliberal institutionalists are saying, is that we should look inside the state. What happens inside the state matters a lot. Especially, for instance, if a state is a democracy, then it really matters a lot, right? Let's think about it. What they looked at the history, and they realized that democracies don't always fight with each other. They don't wage wars against each other. They looked at this empirical fact, and then they asked why. Why is that? Well, and then they considered perhaps because the individuals inside the state are the ones who are going to suffer if there is a war, right? They're going to pay for it, and they're going to actually go there and fight. And they don't want to do that, right? I mean, most of the people don't really want to go to war. So they think that in democracies, those people have a better, a stronger voice inside the state. So they won't let the state go to war, engage in war with other democracies. Things like that. So they said that it's important to look inside the state too. That's another difference. So those are some of the concepts. Again, you will have an opportunity to look at them closely. Some questions from until now? So, last one, and then I will stop talking. And I hope you guys have lots of questions for me. Maybe not. is to look at, well, here I'm already focusing on critical theory, but going back again, looking at Marxism. So Marxism developed through imperialist theory, the world system theory, and arrived at critical theory. I chose to focus on critical theory because we are in Frankfurt, and critical theory developed from the Frankfurt School. Is it okay, you're following? Yeah? And so it seems relevant here, and well, it is an important theory within this approach, right, that came from Marxism. But again, just to remind, this is supposed to be a warm-up. Professor Deitelhoff will go through everything that I said here. She will go through all of that again, of course, with way more complexity and looking systematically at it. So the idea that, well, first looking at Marxism a little bit, because since it comes from Marxism, we should at least have a grasp. I believe that perhaps most of you are familiar with his theory or some of his ideas, but just very briefly, they see historical analysis as fundamental, as the main way to approach facts, is to see how history developed. Especially history of the production process of they emphasize economy. So they think that history of the production process, the way states go on and product things, create products to sell and the economic issues, they are the important ones because they created patterns of relations between between individuals in a society. So they created the ones who have the means of production and the ones who have not, who have to actually use their capacity to work, give it to others, put it at service of others who have the means. So some had capital to invest, right? And others just could provide their services. So the economic sphere, and especially capitalism, created this division between society. And this those social relations are very important for power issues. So they say that economy has a primary importance in explaining practically all other issues that happens, including world affairs. They argue that the capitalist system created a structure in, internationally that looks very different from the structure that realists had seen before, or, well, we're looking at, because it's the same time, but they created a structure that is a product of imperialism, right? So the group of people, classes, who had the means of production, or they had the capital, they joined and created this structure internationally that crossed states, and most of the countries are capitalists, are involved in this way of production. And this structure dominates countries which don't have a lot of industrial possibilities, they are still developing, and they don't have a lot of not only wealth in terms of financial means, they perhaps have resources, but they don't have a lot of technological possibilities and things like that. So capitalism created this structure internationally, which functioned as an empire, or as a hegemonic structure. So those ideas are very important for the theories that developed after Marxism, using Marxism. Of course, they didn't only use Marx theory, they used other authors and scholars too. But then we come to critical theory. And the primary insight of the Frankfurt School, which was inspired on Marx and also Kant. So that's the reason why they come from this line of thought, is that scientific theories, the way you see the world, the way we say that this is what's going on out there. So realists see the world as a struggle for power. They say that their theory is right because you see evidence of that through history. States are always waging wars. So this is a theory, and this theory, what critical theorists said, is that it is not a neutral way of looking at reality. It's not neutral, no. It's in the interests of this class, this powerful, dominant class. It's actually meant to convince everybody else, well, speaking very roughly about it, okay? I mean, very in very pure terms. Of course, it's way more sophisticated than that. But it's a way to convince everybody else that the world is like that. It's really like that. It's always a power struggle. And you should be convinced of that. And don't question, you know? So it's a way to think like that in order to shape the agenda, shape what is going to be, what states, how states will behave, how states will consider their options. What are my options in international affairs? What can I do internationally? Well, not much, because the world is like that, the world is anarchy, so I cannot really change my behavior, it's dangerous. So this this is not a neutral theory. So the main approaches of IR are actually political choices, right? And they should be seen as such, as political choices, as choices that were made by the dominant classes, as mainly in power, those in power. And those theories, the main theories of IR, they help to preserve the status quo. They help to keep things as they are. So because nobody will question much, right? Nobody thinks that they can. States don't think that they can behave differently. So they won't question much. So some of their assumptions of critical theory is that they share with liberals the view that many different factors are at work in explaining international politics, but tend to emphasize the role of non-state actors operating in both sub-state and international levels as influencing the states and the state system. So, for instance, they look at the outer globalization movement and their demonstrations in Seattle in 1999. And against the World Trade Organization, perhaps you guys, this is something, an event that you're familiar with, right? No? Yeah? Okay. So they look at this situation and they say, this matters. They are influencing world affairs, the world politics, you see? And they are what? NGOs, right? Civil society organizations. So for realists, this has no importance. This doesn't change world politics at all. They are not capable of doing that. They don't have power in this regard, right? In the way of non-state actors cannot wage wars, right? They cannot really use force or anything. So this would not matter. What critical theorists say is that, yes, this matters because they are changing ideas. They are changing norms. So they look, for instance, at human rights and how human rights can constrain states, how human rights can be changed and impacted by individuals, by NGOs, by normal people. And this matters, right? I mean, they think that we should not look at the reality as something that cannot be changed, because that's the way the mainstream of IR theory has convinced us to look at. I mean, mainstream IR theory says things are like that. And so they say this is wrong, we should not act like this, so we should look at how to change, and how to change means individual, interacting among each other, and changing the ideas that compel people to behave in a certain way, including theories, individuals changing, future academics, changing the theories of international relations, creating new ones, right? This has an impact on how state leaders see the world and what they can do in this world. So they are concerned about those issues. So ideas are the key to understand international politics, both in terms of how it currently operates and in terms of how it may change. So they are very much concerned with change. They are critical of capitalism, but they acknowledge that it brought the conditions that are necessary for the dialogue among communities, and from there the possibility of change. Why capitalism has benefits too? Well, we can do so much because of globalization today, right? I mean, we can use internet, and we can use technology that was created by a certain way of production, right? So they created iPhones, and now you guys can talk to each other. I can call home, Brazil, far away, right now. In 2 seconds, I talk to my mother and complain to her about something, you know? So this is the benefit of capitalism. So they acknowledge that. This is important. Why? Because it made easier for people to communicate, to talk to each other, and change their ideas. Right? It made it easier for people to find information about what's going on. So they don't have to always believe in what the state leaders tell them. Maybe their state leaders are wrong. Maybe the people inside government doesn't really know or have other interests that are not really my own. So I should find it out, right? And capitalism allowed me to do so. So capitalism had its good sides too. Some of the main concepts are dialectic understanding of history and hegemony. There's no need to go into that, especially because I'm speaking so much, and that was not the idea. So those are the three main approaches. What I would really like now is to see if you guys have questions from the readings, or I'm really open to how you guys want to engage. I have a kind of a exercise that is very easy, that we can do all together, prepared. But it's just in case you guys don't really have any questions. But I hope that you guys, anyone would like to ask something about the readings? No? Yeah. Oh, wow. This is a very good question. Huh. Indeed. I was a bit biased, right, in my sayings. Actually, I've been biased through all the talk, you know, because I just want to emphasize something. I just want to point out that this factor is relevant. So capitalism matters for the theory. So this is what I want to emphasize. Actually, theoretical approaches are usually like that. They emphasize, they exaggerate something. They highlight it. Look, it's important. Because they're pointing to the explanatory factors of that thing that they're looking at. Or perhaps the critical factors of that. So they are intentionally like that. But you're right, we should always question and You pose actually a very good argument. I don't have an answer, especially because this is something you will have to go through the readings for this theoretical approach and see if this is really the case that they think that capitalism is, there's no problems anymore with capitalism now. Okay, I can tell you in advance that coming from Marxism and thinking that capitalism is great is a bit too much, right? I mean, it doesn't go well. Yeah. So they have criticisms, of course. I just pointed out that they are not as critical as Marxists are, okay, towards capitalism. Just not as much, because they see this good thing, okay? But it's a good point. Someone else? Okay.
What are
the
expectations
from
us? What are we going to prepare?
Yeah. Okay, organizational questions. Unfortunately, I'm not the one who is going to tell you with accuracy what is... this is, I think, the only class that is planned to be a tutorial that you guys can really interact like this. I think the other... But I believe the Professor Deidehoff left some minutes in her class to be open for questions. So, yeah. No, this is an exception. I believe that you guys will see very, I will be seated with you guys, I think, in the next classes, but my voice is a bit annoying, so thank God for that. So, Professor Deidehoff will be really the one who's going to give you classes. But I hope you enjoyed mine. Anyway. Okay. No, it's fine. Let's just simplify it then. Maybe I talk too much. And yeah, there's always a mistake. So let's just simplify. Neorealists or structural realists. Right? Two names for the same theory. And neoliberal institutionalists or institutionalists. Perhaps we could say that the core of their disagreement is mainly the idea that rational bargains can tame power. So while neorealists think that power relations are all that matters, right? It shapes, constrains states, shapes state behavior, it's all that matters. Neoliberal institutionalists say that you can rationally bargain, negotiate with other states, use good reasons or good, not only good reasons to convince other states why that certain cooperation is important, why we need to agree on that. So states discussing climate change, for instance, what they're doing. They're trying to persuade each other, or they're trying to let's come up with a certain arrangement of I reduce a bit of my production and then I don't issue that much pollution. I do that. And then my state will suffer a little bit, right? Because the economy will suffer, right? So it's bad for me. I will do that, but then you will do something else. And through this agreement, which is actually rational, a rational way of looking at things, we can improve the world scenario for both of us. We both can gain. Why? Because then we contain climate change, hopefully, right? So this is the possibility that they see. And why do they see it differently? It's a good point to go back and see it at this core. They see it differently because they think that there is a possibility of having mutual gains. So now liberal institutionalists, they think it's possible to have mutual gains. That a state can benefit from an agreement, while another state can also benefit from the agreement, and that won't impact that much on the way power is distributed. So they don't look as realists look to distribution of power in terms of It's realists look at distribution of power in relational terms. So I have more power than you, and that's what matters. Not that I have power, but I have more than you. So this is what matters for realists, right? And then they look at that because they're always, they look at the word like this, of the distribution of power, because they are always concerned that you will attack me. So it matters that I, not only that I have power, but that I have more than you. You see? That's neo-realists. But for neoliberal institutionalists, they say that, well, power is not all there is to international relations. There's not, it's not all about powers. States will not always think about invading others. They will not always use force to get what they want. Sometimes they will just use persuasion, or I mean, they will try to convince other states, right, to get what they want. I don't necessarily need to be aggressive in order to get what I want. So neoliberal institutionalists say that because of that, we can have an agreement that will benefit you and me. So I gain power more or less than you, it doesn't matter that much. I gain power, you gain power, we are both happy. And that's how they look at it, okay? So they think that we can see the world differently through this possibility of rational bargaining, to this possibility of coming to terms with each other, that there can be mutual benefits, that can be a harmony of interests, which means that our interests not always conflict with each other. Sometimes we want the same stuff, okay? Actually, they do that by explaining this whole abstract ideas in very fun games. And I believe Professor Deitelhoff will go through those games with you, like the prisoner's dilemma, and I believe that she will go through all of them with you, and you will look at this more closely. But the main idea is this one. Did you, this was okay? Yeah? Another question, maybe? In terms of power.
In terms of power, because you say, okay, I have more power than you, so I can be aggressive, but I shouldn't be, and so on. And I think it was mentioned in the text that there are more perspectives to power.
Yeah, yes, you're right. Great question. Yeah, indeed. Realists have a kind of a narrow view on what they call power, right? Yeah, they see it mainly as what the stuff that makes a state more capable of waging wars, because this is what matters for them, right? I'm being the devil's advocate here all the time, right? When I explain, so realists see power as perhaps not only the military capabilities and military realm. But also, for instance, money, right? This is also important because money buys weapons, and well, money can do many things, they say. I don't know. So they look at those things that empowers the state to mainly defend itself or be aggressive toward the states, because it's all about survival. It's all about maintaining your territory, maintaining your independence. It's mainly about that. But liberals have a very, perhaps not that different, but they do see power as a more complex phenomenon. The whole acquiring power, being more powerful. This is more complex. I mean, you can convince other states, right, of things. You can use diplomacy in so many ways, right, to get what you want. So it's not all about force. It's not all about this kind of aggressive power. Critical theory also has another view on power, but that's a bit more complex, and I think Professor Deitelhoff will really get into that.
But when we have these
Yeah.
They think, okay, maybe there's one who acts more like after the liberal theory and another who goes more with the realist.
Yeah.
So still there's a problem when they interact with each other.
Yes, exactly. Well pointed. What to do in this complex situation? How do you behave then, right? That's actually what realists use, this argument you just raised, is what realists use to explain why states didn't do what they predicted states would do. So why states did not wage war, or why states actually got into war. Sometimes they make a lot of mistakes analyzing reality. And then they argue, well, I did a mistake exactly because of that. The state leader of, U.S., the U.S. president, he was mistaken about his information. He was mistaken about how much power, or if that other state had nuclear weapons or not. He was mistaken. He did a mistake, right? So realists say that there are the reality is way more imperfect in terms of statesmen don't really follow the logic that they believe is the right logic, and that's why states make mistakes or they don't behave how they said they would. Have a different opinion? No? Yeah. Yeah, so it becomes a very, very complex scenario, very complex scenario to analyze. But as I said, theories are supposed to just be like a pair of glasses that you put in order to simplify it. Doesn't mean that it's the reality. You should not think like that, that it's the real thing happening. What is happening, you need to look at newspapers and, right? How analysts, IR experts say, oh, this is, I mean. More questions? Okay. I am a bit not sure. Class is supposed to end at 11:30, or is it? I'm not sure. Is it at 11:30? Yeah, so we have 10 minutes. Okay. Well, what I have, you guys want to leave? Want to leave? No? Cool. What I have is that I think in 10 minutes, this is super simple, and it's just like the warming up that I mentioned. I selected some quotes from the theorists, from the scholars, explaining their theories. And they're very like easy to interpret. And I just would like us to see, okay, this is realist, this is liberal, those are the Marxists. And it's very easy to grasp. So, for instance, this one. Nothing can be done to change, to alter, the individual's drive to be all powerful. Who could have said, which theory could have said that? Aha, yeah, realists. Easy, right? Yeah. In a system where there is no higher authority that sits above great powers, and where there is no guarantee that one will not attack another, it makes good sense for each state to be powerful enough to protect itself in the event it is attacked. Who said that? Who could have said that?
Realism.
Yeah, but realists are the only ones who could have said that. I mean, liberals also believe that, right? The state is anarchic, and the struggle for power is going on, right? They also think like that. So they could perhaps have said that.
Yeah, but I mean, liberals would probably say that institutions could just make this dilemma of growing and becoming more powerful. That institutions
true, exactly. You're right, this is more fitted for realists. Humans are what they are, not because it's hardwired into them to be self-interested individuals, but by virtue of relations through which they live their lives. Who could have said that? Which one? Liberals. Well, liberals would have said that human nature is good, perhaps. And it's really human nature and cannot be changed. So human beings are good by nature. That would be what liberals would say. This is perhaps closer to... Yeah, exactly, yeah. The Marxists, they would see that, well, things can change and individuals are not by nature selfish or by nature good. They look at others' interests too. They would not say that. They said that individuals are shaped by the relations that they had through their lives, right? Especially the class that they belong to, right? If the class of production are. We have a moral obligation to leave the state of nature and form political conditions under which humans can live morally. We have a duty to build institutions that guarantee freedom, of establishing a just order that would also eliminate the source of conflicts. This is easy. Yeah, liberals, yeah. Kant more specifically. War is not the only way that states can gain power. They can do so by increasing the size of their population and by the share of global wealth, as China has done over the past few decades. Who could have said that? Liberals or realists? Realists? We have a dispute there. Yeah, it actually was realists. Because realists don't, well, okay, perhaps you're both right, actually, because liberals share, at least the neoliberal institutionalists share with neorealists this assumption, so both right. But this was from a realist, it was a quote from a realist. So they think of ways of gaining power not only through weapons necessarily, but also through other means, like increasing the population and economic, having more economic resources and things like that. When and how internal forces find external expression, if they do, cannot be explained in terms of the interacting parties, if the situation in which they act and interact constrains them from some actions, disposes them towards others, and affects the outcomes of their interactions. This is a bit more complex, right? Was said by a liberal, was actually said by Kilhain and Nine, two scholars in neoliberalism. He meant to say that you need to look inside the states and in order to also explain how states behave. Not only cannot be explained in terms of the interacting parties alone, you know, cannot be explained by the anarchic system alone, but what happens inside the state also matters. That's what he meant. Institutional cooperation in international relations is more difficult than imagined because states have distributional concerns and not simply welfare maximizing ones. This is connected to the idea of how the idea that liberals think that we can have mutual gains and realists think that we cannot have mutual gains. That is always a zero-sum game, as they say. So this was said by... Yeah, perhaps to advance into... Didn't get that well into it. Was said by a realist. He said, they say that it doesn't matter if you think of welfare, the gains are going to maximize if cooperation is going to maximize the gains, the benefits of all the parties involved. It's not really this that we should look at, but the way that power or the gains are distributed between the two parties. So if I have more benefits than, if a state has more benefits from cooperating than another state, this is what matters. This is the what we should look at, not welfare maximizing concerns. Questions regarding political ends are evacuated from the study of world politics and the ability of theory critically to contemplate alternative possible worlds is effectively denied. Who would have said that? Oh, I'm in front. No? Nobody, really? Possibility of thinking of changes? We talked. Huh? Yeah, exactly. Critical theory. Good. Oops. Capitalism is disabling insofar as this way of organizing social life distorts and obscures real historical possibilities for social self-determination. What? Yeah, exactly. Marxism. Marxism? Critical theory or Marxist. We're looking more at approaches, right? So, a world in which actors other than states participate directly in world politics, in which a clear hierarchy of issues does not exist, and which force is an ineffective instrument of policy. I actually read that before when I was talking. Yeah, exactly. Liberals. In the final analysis, states have no choice but to put their own interests ahead of the interests of other states, as well as the so-called international community. Could have said that. Realists. Yeah. You guys in the back are hearing me? Yeah? Yeah? States compete among themselves either to gain power at the expense of others or at least to make sure that they do not lose power. Yeah, exactly. Good. Okay, I think I will... You guys got more or less the idea, right? I will end here because time is up. Thanks for the attention. I hope it was fine.